This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
What's up, Wes? You doing all right?
I'm good. How are you, Pack? Everything okay this morning?
Awesome. Was hoping for a more entertaining national championship game. Didn't get it. What else is new in the college football playoffs, right? You like blowouts? We got your blowouts. Congratulations to Alabama, and congratulations to college football for getting to the finish line. Right, Nick Saban, historic win last night. Great coach, one of the all-time greats regardless of sport. But I just thought it was amazing that we got to the finish line and crowned a national champion. And again, a tip of the hat, as we said yesterday, but really emphasize it today to everyone that participated, at least tried to, because that was in a most unique, crazy, unpredictable college football season that you'll ever see. And hopefully we can get to 21 and get back to a little bit more normalcy. But man alive, what an amazing year in college football. And I don't care if you won the national championship or you went 0-for. The fact that you're out there doing your thing and staying safe and at least trying to and going through all the protocols, congratulations to everybody associated. That was some kind of journey that we watched last night, the end of it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we've said this since July, even when it looked pretty dark that we might not have a season, that the commitment level of not only the student-athletes from that side, players themselves, but also the coaches, administrators, the medical foresight of folks to get together and collaborate was critical to the success of college football. Was every game played? Absolutely not. Did it go according to the script? No. But was the road straight? No. But we got to the end of it. And congratulations to everybody who had the discipline and the foresight to try and get it done. And you know what? We'll see what we learned here in a couple of years from this experience, because I do believe it's one that we'll take something away from it, Mark, and use it in college football going forward. I don't know how much of the medical of it will be, but I do believe that the operational and function side of college football taught us some things this year.
By the way, the last 3 years of the college football playoff, the last 3 years,
okay,
we've had one game, one, decided by single digits. One.
Wow. Oof.
And that was the Fiesta Bowl last year, the one that made Ohio State obsessed with Clemson. That's it. Everything else has been a double-digit beatdown. Average margin of victory in those games, 21 points.
Wow.
Kind of strange, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, and look, I'm hearing the drumbeats of expansion, right? And knowing about how the CFP differs from the BCS and its structure and organization as you do. I mean, you followed the BCS when you were doing day-to-day, right? I mean, in Charlotte, you know how the BCS was met with so much angst about the unknown. And it did have a lot of unknown to it. But to this day, I will tell you that Roy Kramer, the former commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, deserves an incredible amount of credit to just get something structured where we just didn't have some arbitrary, abstract naming of somebody as a national champion, right?
Yep.
So was the BCS perfect? Absolutely not. Is the CFP approved an improvement? Absolutely. But you can hear the drumbeat now for next spring when these commissioners and the CFP folks get together in April, Pack. And let's hope everybody's able to be in the same room in April. That's going to be one of the telltale signs of what lies ahead in the CFP. All these people that think there's going to be some change right out of the gate, no, they have this annual meeting in the spring in April, and when they meet in April, they'll be able to look at numbers, look at the business plan. And when you say business plan, folks, it's just not snap a finger and go to 8. It's just not that. And I understand the interest and sometimes obsession in expansion of this playoff to bring everybody else closer to the holy grail, if you will, of being in the playoff. But it's got to be the right time. And from an economic standpoint, I'm not sure it is the right time, but they'll sit and look at it and be able to take questions. And that features the five commissioners of the Power Five conferences. It features I think it was Craig Thompson, still the G5 guy from the Mountain West.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Right. It'll feature him. It'll feature some of the structure involved in it, the television partners, ESPN and others, about how they go about doing this. And I think that's an important thing to remember when all of a sudden, you know, we get this snap of the fingers and I want expansion when it comes to the college football playoff. But I think we got a lot to learn, too. And I think one is something you and I have talked about from the old radio days on the Central to now, and that is this. The schedule methodology is going to be even more critical going forward. We talk about it all the time, but I think scheduling is going to be really, really important if we get to expansion, and it's going to be important, period, for the way these Power Five set up, too.
As far as expansion goes, I think, number one, it's inevitable, and number two, nothing gets done until something gets sold. So until the guy who owns the rights, and we know who that is because we work for them, comes off the hip and says, hey, I got a grand idea, and if everybody agrees to it, down the road you go. But I'll just say this. You know, I always say, just entertain me. It's always been my mantra from day one doing any kind of media. We've had 7 years of the college football playoff. Seven. We've had 21 games played. Best teams in the country, right? The best four in the country. 21 games, 7 years. We've had a grand total of six of the 21 games determined by single digits. Six.
Wow.
We've had 10 of the 21 games determined by 20 or more points. Does it seem possible when you have the four best teams in the country? That's not, hey, a one seed taking on a 16 seed. That's a one playing a four or two playing a three. Does it seem possible that you could have such a despairing mark between good, competitive, and blowout, right, than you would in that combination? But those are what the numbers are. And, you know, when you take a snapshot of what we've seen in the 7 years of the college football playoff, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State, those three big juggernauts, have won 17 of the 21 games. Now let that marinate a second. Bama, Clemson, Ohio State have won 17 of the 21 games played. The only four that they did not was LSU with their sweep last year, which obviously involved a game with Clemson. Georgia beating Oklahoma in that incredible Rose Bowl game. And year one, when Oregon took a Jameis Winston and Florida State to the woodshed in the Rose Bowl. That's it. Those are the only four games in 7 years that did not involve either Bama, Clemson, or Ohio State winning the playoff game. Now, you think that's healthy for college football? I'm just asking the question. If you're Bama, Clemson, or Ohio State, you're like, hey, life's pretty good. What's wrong? What's the problem? But I think big picture, I think college football has kind of reached the point where they need to have some conversations. I really do. And I love the sport.
Isn't it? And let me ask you this. We get to a point where, and look, they're important games, right? They're three really big games. We understand that, right?
Three most important.
But even the other New Year's Six games, they're kind of getting distanced by those three.
Sure.
Okay?
No question.
And then the other games that are being played in the postseason bowl rotation, and you know, I know you and I are going to differ on
the dog ate my homework.com bowl. Those 29 of them,
sure.
Those 35 of those that we've got, yeah, those.
Sure. Yes. Okay. But let's go back to the NCAA.
Those? Yes.
Let's go back to the NCAA tournament for a minute. You and I are old enough to remember when the NCAA tournament was 32 teams. Right,
I got no problem with it.
But what was the key to the NCAA tournament becoming a national event?
Well, you and I are going to differ on this answer. I'm going to tell you it's money, like it always is.
Well, sure.
But don't give me Cinderella.
The NCAA, they went to 32. They went to 48. They went to, 56?
More money.
Then they went to 64.
More money.
And then they went to this abstract number of 68 so we could create something in Dayton, Ohio for four more units of television.
More money.
Just saying.
Wes, I don't have a problem with 32. You want your regular season to be important? You want people to be dialed in on a Tuesday night in the middle of January and February? Hey, not everybody's getting in. You better win that game on a Tuesday night. I'm just saying. You want that regular season to get people their eyeballs popping out of their head? You're asking me a question. I'm not telling you what it is.
I'm telling you college football would benefit from looking at the NCAA expansion. If we keep talking about NCAA and expanding in the college football playoff world, look at the expansion process that took place in the NCAA basketball tournament from the mid-1970s to the early 2000s that changed the dynamic in 25 years of that entire project. And I know it was money-driven, and I get that. Plus, we're doing this. We're talking about expanding the college football playoff at a time when we're also talking about separation of Power Five and everybody else. Fair?
Oh, the divide between the haves and the have-nots, I think, only gets wider and wider every season. And I believe with what we're getting ready to go through, and I say we as a collective, all fans of college athletics, I think this financial tidal wave that's getting ready to hit everybody in 21 and 22, I think you're going to see the divide get even wider. I think you're going to see some sports wiped out. Out.
Mm-hmm.
Catch you later. See ya. That's what I think.
That's that part, though, we're talking about two trails here, and they're not going to be congruent. You know, the path of the Power Five and the new landscape of college athletics will be one trail. The expansion of the college football playoff will be another trail. They're not going to grow at the same. If we get them at the same time, then we'll be fortunate. There's no possible way, though, the timing on that's going to work the same way. I mean, look, we've got the whole congressional, you know, judicial side of NLI and now the transfer rule because the NCAA put a halt to that. Now, all of a sudden, they're, you know, Chicken Little. And so now we got to find out, you know, that element, that's part of the college landscape. Well, there's no possible way that the CFP is going to merge at the same time or expand at the same time. Those things aren't going to run on the same tracks. Just not. I just don't think that's possible. If it is, it's unbelievable.
It's not going to happen at the same time. I can promise.
No way.
Promise.
Yeah, no way. So, anyway. Now it's funny how we get to these conversations, though.
Yeah, now that we've solved the world's problems and we've gone 11 minutes into the show that the smart people in Bristol are like, what are these guys talking about? That's nothing on our script. Now that we got everybody on a roll here, you ready to go? You ready to start the show?
Sure.
All right. We got hoops to get into today. We got more football.
A good schedule tonight.
Yeah, we got one game of major note. Ranked teams. That doesn't happen very often in this day and age, right? The AP poll came out yesterday with the men, and we have a ranked versus ranked tonight in Blacksburg, which will be good with Duke and Virginia Tech. We have Buddy Boeheim joined us yesterday. He was great, as he always is. Cuse is on the road in Chapel Hill. And kind of, I'm not going to say it's a must win, but it's a really got to need to have a wanna tonight for BC with Miami at home, right? When you're sitting there at 0-5, you better take care of business at home when Miami comes to town. And the Canes are feeling good after their big win against NC State. Yeah. So we got games to get into. Yeah. Good guests, though, today, as usual, right?
Oh, yeah. Leonard Hamilton's coming by. Brendan Marks there in the 8 o'clock hour. 9 o'clock hour features Jen Hoover. And one of three former ACC institutional players to be named yesterday to the College Football Hall of Fame. C.J. Spiller from, was it Lake Butler, Florida? Is that where he's from, I believe?
He's a Florida boy. Yep, no question about it. Congratulations to all of them.
So C.J. Spiller.
Dan Morgan.
Yep.
ACC ties. Tremendous players.
Absolutely. So C.J. Spiller will join us at 9:30. Yesterday named a College Football Hall of Famer in just his second year of eligibility, by the way. Harris Barton, of course, who won three Super Bowls with the San Francisco 49ers and was one of the great scholar athletes of ACC football. That's all at 9 o'clock. Buddy Boeheim, bottom of the hour, and it was fun yesterday. He was great. Good to talk to him. And Jen Hoover comes by, and you've promised you're going to wear the hat today, I think.
Sure, no question. She delivered the Deacon hat. I will wear it. I wear it anytime we bring up the Wake Forest women's basketball or anything with Wake Forest.
Yeah. Part of Swiss.
The Swiss.
Yeah. And then at some point today during this show, Pack and I are going to go through a process called 6 degrees of Billy and Woody.
Yeah, we've never done this, and this could be a complete, total on-air disaster, but we don't care. We're going to roll it out there and see where this goes. We have no idea how it's going to play. We'll figure it out.
But there are people, Drew and Josh, who think we can tie ACC people back to either Billy, Woody, or both. And yesterday we got into a little bit of a rabbit hole, and all of a sudden the lights came on, and now we're going to see what happens with all this. Again, this will be historical, but can we tie certain people all the way back to either one or both of our dads? The answer is probably yes on most of these, wouldn't you think, Pac?
I don't know. We're going to find out. I mean, like I said, it could be a complete, total disaster. It may be one of those things that we look back and go, can you believe we tried to pull that off? Or it may be awesome.
That's right.
I have no idea. We're going to figure it out as we go.
All right. So sit tight. Leonard Hamilton, Brendan Marks, Jen Hoover, CJ Spiller, phone calls, and other things all to come. But three big ones tonight in the ACC. And we are going to dive into them next. Yep, Mike Young's going to get some popcorn tonight because Coach K's coming to town to see Keve Aluma. And we'll chronicle those. And the Tar Heels in the Orange and the dentist, Marek Dulagai. All that and more coming up next on Packer and Durham. Good morning.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, 844-SAY-ACCN. All right, we mentioned we'll get football, we got hoops, we got everything today on the show. But tonight, mm-hmm. there are some games of note. The AP poll came out yesterday. You had five ACC teams ranked in the top 20. Clemson 12, Louisville 16, Virginia 18, Duke 19, Virginia Tech 20. Tonight, 19 is at 20. Duke at Virginia Tech. Now keep in mind, it would be awesome if the Castle had everybody packed in there tonight with the Blue Devils coming to town, but that will not be the case. But does it mean the game's not going to be good? Because it should be. And the Blue Devils, Jalen Johnson, it'll be curious to see what happens on that front. It looks like he's getting a little bit closer and closer and closer. So that's something to keep an eye on. And for Virginia Tech, really a chance to make another claim that, guess what, we belong here in this upper tier. This is a really, really big game for Mike Young and the boys at home.
Yeah, I think the return of Jalen Johnson and Brendan Marks will join us coming up middle of the hour, middle of the next hour at 8:30. I think the Jalen Johnson factor is in play tonight, Pac, as you mentioned. Matthew Hurts played great. Looks like some of these other guys are starting to round in a little bit. But Virginia Tech presents several kind of factors for Duke to consider. Blue Devils will have to get to the perimeter and run Virginia Tech off the line tonight, especially from three-point territory. And then Keve Aluma, that's where they'll need Jalen Johnson the most, because Keve Aluma is a factor from the three-point line in. His ability to be a weapon at distance and be a weapon certainly around the rim, I think, is a huge factor tonight. The Hokies, after watching them the other night, Mark, I'm kind of buying a little bit here. I'm
definitely buying.
Thinking Virginia. Yeah, Virginia. Well, you've been buying since sources.
I told you before the season started. Yeah. Virginia Tech, my boys up there said, hey, y'all keep sleeping on us. You wait and see. We're going to be really, really good. And they are.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, is when you start to see what they've been able to accomplish here, they've kind of had their dips. They understand who they've played. They benefit from it, and they move on to the next one. And the other night when they came from behind at halftime to beat Notre Dame, and the Irish didn't shoot it well at all in the second half, but you saw some elements about Virginia Tech that were incredibly encouraging. I think it's one of those things that Mike Young's got a chance to take a huge step tonight with Duke visiting at 7.
Well, one of the things we talked about last week and mentioned it again yesterday, when it comes to the quote-unquote blue bloods in this league, you know, Duke's, Virginia's, North Carolina's, Florida State's, getting into some kind of rhythm into this season. I mean, Duke and Virginia have beaten nothing but winless ACC teams. Well, now Duke tonight has a chance to say, hey, guess what? You know what? Don't forget about us. We're still Duke.
Right.
But, you know, Virginia Tech's going to be the best conference game that they've played against, I mean, in terms of team. And you'd have to do it on the road. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, we've talked about the road is, you know, home road, was it 15-11? It's what the home teams are in conference play this year. So it's not exactly like it used to be as far as home court goes. But for Duke, this is a step up in competition as far as their ACC schedule goes. We've already seen them struggle at home with Michigan State and Illinois, two good clubs. Virginia Tech is a good club. I mean, anybody that's good enough to beat Villanova is certainly good enough to beat Duke at home if they play well.
Yeah, yeah. So look at that one tonight. And, Aluma is one thing. I would still say Couture and Cohn are going to be factors as well. The ability to open up the floor with three-point shooting. And Virginia Tech wants to hold opponents. Mike Young told Jordan Cordette and I the other day, the number is 8. Anything above 8 from an opponent is usually trouble for Virginia Tech. So not only scoring the ball from distance, but preventing those shots from distance also critical to Virginia Tech. You mentioned Miami BC, and you think this is a big spot in the road for the Eagles tonight, right?
You have to win this game if you're Jim Christian. I'm not going to say it's a must win when you're talking about early January and you're 0-5 in the league, but you got to at least get something for the effort, right? I mean, they've been okay in games, right? They've given you spikes where they've played really, really well. They've also had games and moments like the Syracuse game at home in which they got beat by a trillion. But, I think if you're BC, there's a lot of speculation about Jim Christian's situation at the end of last year. He's now back, but you're 0-5 in the league, and you're at home against really a wounded team in Miami that's at least feeling good about itself with their big win on the road at NC State. I just think that if you're Boston College at 0-5, I'm not going to say it's a must win, but you really need to win this game. We can't be coming back here tomorrow talking about BC at 0-6 because that is a humongous problem for Jim Christian. They got to win this game.
Yeah. The other thing is tonight you get a really good guard matchup too. Jay Heath and Isaiah Wong will be interesting because of the way they both attack. And sometimes Heath is, to his detriment, out of control at times. Wong has gotten the propensity here recently to just hit shots that are just unbelievable. The one that went in the other day at the, late stages of NC State games, just incredible. But that's the silver lining to the Chris Likes injury and things of that nature, is the development and the emergence of Isaiah Wong. For Boston College, Steph Mitchell's done exactly what I thought Steph Mitchell would do. Half dozen, 7 rebounds a game, giving you close to double figures, assists, steals, all those things. C.J. Felder's played well at times. He's played well at times. Langford's played well at times. Boston College has got to come together. And I understand what you're saying about the game tonight. But I'm going to be anxious to see how the Eagles, kind of handle their business here. This is an interesting game. Boston College is averaging 71 points a game, but allowing almost 80 a game. They're going to have to score the ball. No, they're going to have to score the ball tonight to beat Miami. They need to get a game close to the 80s because Miami wants to grind the thing a little bit, and they've done a pretty good job of it. They did so on Saturday in Raleigh.
Miami at least has the excuse, not that they're looking for one, but at least Miami has the excuse, hey, we're banged up. We're beat up. We got 4 starters have been hurt and so forth. We're just trying to put healthy bodies out there to go compete, and they have. Mm-hmm. Right? They had 3 consecutive games they lost by 2 points or less, found a way to beat NC State, which was a great win for them. So I get a sense at least Miami, despite their 1 win in the conference, playing with confidence, right. I get a sense of Boston College, they are so desperate to win a game that you better take care of Miami at home, because if you don't, just exactly who are you going to beat? I mean, at what point in time are you going to – I mean, who do you line up and say, you know what, we're better than this team tonight? I think tonight BC needs to win this game. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
And we got this other thing going on in Chapel Hill tonight. Last time we saw these two teams play was the ACC tournament, and Syracuse put on a show. It's as good as I've seen them look in a long, long time. We had some fun with Buddy Boeheim about this yesterday. And you got to figure North Carolina remembers that. For the most part, Roy's had really good success against Jim Boeheim in Syracuse, especially since they joined the league. But the last time they played, it was ugly in Greensboro.
Sure was. And the game tonight is, You know, no game is simple, but one of the stats to keep an eye on tonight is just simply the shooting aspect of it. Carolina is dead last in the ACC, hitting just better than 5 threes a game. Syracuse is number 2 in the ACC, hitting almost 9 threes a game. Is it that simple tonight? I don't know. It might be. The turnover margin's also interesting. Carolina's minus 2.4 a game. Syracuse is plus 4. So those differences right there alone. Now, Syracuse, nowhere near as good as Carolina is rebounding, but the Orange aren't bad, right? So will it be incumbent of Carolina tonight? Is it easier if you make shots over the zone? Absolutely. But what if Carolina, who's not shot the ball particularly well at any stage so far this season from the perimeter, what do the Tar Heels need to do tonight? Probably have a little patience. Does that mean they got to turn it down a little bit from a tempo standpoint? Perhaps. But at the same time, I think it'll be interesting to watch this game unfold because, Pac, you know this. After the disappointing loss to Syracuse, for Pittsburgh to Syracuse, now all of a sudden they come back and get the win against Georgetown. The Orange can really kind of push the button here a little bit with a road win in Chapel Hill tonight. Likewise, Carolina has not played since the Playtech layup beat Miami. It's been a bit of a break for the Tar Heels, too. So it's an important game, really, for the Orange and Carolina, both, I think.
No, there's no question. Especially you take a snapshot of where is everybody, big picture within the league. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you better believe it's important. Beating Georgetown, I mean, Georgetown stinks. I don't care what everybody can talk about all those great Big East rivalries all you want. Georgetown, they can't play dead in a cowboy movie. Go look it up. But
Syracuse, you're just hitting everybody with the stink button. They stink.
They stink. Georgetown stinks. They stink. I mean, come on.
I got you. Okay.
I'm going to be transparent. You know, it sounds good, but they stink, all right? You're supposed to be Georgetown
right.
at home.
But you're telling me there's no Bubakar Al, there's no Reggie Williams, there's no Michael Graham on that floor?
You can go relive all that Big East stuff you want. This Georgetown team is not any good, period. Look it up.
That wasn't Grady Mateen right there?
No, it was not.
Okay.
But Syracuse, with the way they played at BC, that team could beat anybody in the conference, is all I'm going to tell you. When they're making shots, they're a problem, like everybody else. So North Carolina, you know what? They're going to hit the glass. I expect they're going to dominate the boards. But, you know, I go back to that ACC tournament game. North Carolina had great success against these guys, but they didn't play very well. And I don't know if they're going to pull a Ryan Day,
plaster
the scoreboard, you know, put the score up there and get motivated by it. But I'm telling you, man, you remember that ACC tournament game? That was one of those you're like,
Syracuse.
Wow, who are these guys?
I said Pitt. Syracuse hit shots in Greensboro. Syracuse hit a ton of shots in that game,
by the way.
There's
the answer to your question for the night. If they make them, I think chances. If they don't, I like North Carolina.
Here's the other thought that lives in this world. We're looking at a possible Orange run here because you get Carolina tonight. You're at Pittsburgh on Saturday, and I'd certainly think that Coach Boeheim's team would want to avenge the loss they just had to the Panthers, right? Then you're home to Miami
and home to
Virginia Tech.
Wes, you can't do that. Man, this whole COVID thing, I don't even look past tonight. I mean, I know you like the next five games. Hey, man, we figured this thing out. You can't get to the weekend without there being a hiccup somewhere. So let's see if we can get to 9 p.m. tonight at the Smith Center for Syracuse in North Carolina. And by the way,
I feel good about tonight.
I hope.
Feel good about tonight's games.
I hope. I hope you're right. I put nothing past anybody at this point, Tom. Hey, we've had teams travel. Ask Duke. They made that road trip to Tallahassee. Thought they were going to play. Right? They didn't play. They came back home.
True.
I mean, so we've had this act before. So, knock on wood, we get three good ones tonight. Knock on wood.
All right,
Georgetown still stinks.
Before we go to break here, let me just tell you, it's a big game for Carolina because four of their next six are on the road.
Okay, great. Tonight they're at home. It's the only thing that matters.
Including Saturday at Florida State.
Okay. All right, schedule maker.
That's all I got.
You're the king of schedules. You are the king of schedules. That's what I said this yesterday. Anything that involves a schedule, I say, hey, go talk to my partner. He's the schedule guy. I know nothing. Except that Georgetown stinks. What is this?
Got the card for the game tonight. It's got a lot of scheduling.
How many crayons you bring out for that one? About 8 or 10?
No. We're not going to get into that today. I'm not going to get into that today. Although here's a bag of the markers.
Oh,
just
I knew
in
that
case
was coming.
You know.
I knew it was coming. All right, can we go to break? We got stuff.
Buddy Boeheim coming up next. In case you missed it from yesterday, always fun to visit with the Syracuse star. He is great fun. By the way, the home pickup games don't sound like a bad deal either. You know what we're talking about? How about Marek Dolezal eating pizza? You're going to hear all about that with Buddy Boeheim next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. It's a Tuesday. Amazing that we got through a football season, and now we're rolling right in the middle of January with hoops. Speaking of, yesterday, Buddy Boeheim joined us, and he is a return engagee, and he is fantastic with us. He has a blast. He cuts up with us, and we asked him point blank, did the big win against Saturday, what did it do for his team, and maybe what did it do for him personally? Here's what he said.
It was big for us. We knew coming in, losing to Pittsburgh was tough. They're a tough team, and they battled back, and, you know, they won that game. They took it from us, and, being up 18, you never want to see a game go like that. We just couldn't make shots. Me specifically, been struggling shooting, you know, coming back after an 18-day rest. It's hard to get back into rhythm right away, but, you know, I knew eventually I would, and just keep working hard and keep working through it. I mean, I've been there before. Everyone goes in slumps, and, for me and Joe to see some shots go in Saturday night was big for our confidence going forward, and it was just a lot of fun being out there and, you know, getting in a rhythm and getting a much-needed win, and, you know, they came back a little. They fought. We knew it. What they would. It's a great rivalry, as always, and just being able to weather the storm and be able to, you know, close that game out was huge for us, and now we got another big one Tuesday, so good momentum going forward for sure.
Take us through the moments on Saturday when Dolezal took one in the chops. He tries to go to the locker room with Brad Pike, the trainer, and your dad/coach won't let him. You got to be laughing during the whole deal, right? Because Marek wants to go to the locker room. Look at it, you're cracking up right now. So I know there was a moment here, right?
Yeah, it was hilarious because it was Marek, and there's no one else we thought of, like, there's no other person it would be than Marek. I mean, he's took a charge against Zion my freshman year. He's done stuff that, you know, just everyone wouldn't think three times before doing it, not even twice, and he just does it. And, you know, Pickett got fouled, and he was going to the line, and I turned around, getting ready to get on the free throw line, and everyone's saying stop, and I look, and Marek's with our trainer, Brad, about to go in the locker room. I see my dad just kind of yelling, like, hey, like, no, like, get back out there. And I just see in there, and I hear Joe say, Joe's like, there's a tooth on the ground, and I'm like, what? I'm like, that's definitely Marek. And he comes back, and he's trying to talk on the free throw line. He can barely talk because he's got to swallow his own blood. And, you know, he's just saying, that really hurt. Like, I didn't know I could come back in the game. He didn't know what to do because, I mean, I don't think he's ever had that happen before, seen that. And, you know, he's next day he gets it put back in, and he finds out he can't eat pizza for 2 weeks. So that's probably the worst thing. The worst news he's gotten all year.
Hey, buddy, as given your dad's status as a legendary coach, how many times did it go through your head as a kid growing up where maybe you caught an elbow in the nose or somebody pushed you down and you're like, Dad, and he looked at you and said, son, get up and play, right? I mean, he's as old school as it gets. I'm sure you're sitting back going, yep, I've seen this act before, been there, done that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's always been like that. No crying, no nothing. If you get injured, you keep, you know, you try to walk it off. And if you can play, you can play. There's no wasted reps, nothing. I mean, in practice, if you go down, he's saying get up right away, no matter what. And, you know, you get used to that. And it's fun having someone like that. You get some laughs out of it. And whenever someone goes down, you're waiting for him to say, hear how fast he says get up and you're fine, all this and that.
All right. during the lockdown, we got a lot of videos out of the home gym. First of all, what goes on in the home gym? How many shots can you get up when you're at home? First of all, and Jimmy and you must have, you know, a barrel of laughs in there getting shots up. But at the same time, what kind of games we got going on at that spot? You got guys coming over to hang out and play ball?
Oh, yeah. Ever since we got it. We got it in about 9th, 10th grade for me. And right when we got it, I'd have 8 or 9 friends come over every weekend. We'd play 5-on-5 for 2-3 hours till 1 in the morning. And Jimmy would have his friends over. And probably the best – I mean, we'd have, you know – Eric Devendorf comes over all the time. We play 2-on-2 with him, my brother, former players, get into a lot of fights and arguments. And probably one of the most famous games we would play is a half-court challenge. And we'd get about 8 friends, and we'd shoot half-court shots. And the last one that didn't make it would have to do a dare or something. And that would have to go with, you know, messing with my dad or something that just was, you know, something they were terrified of doing. So that was the best game. Whenever I tell stories about that, people lose it. And just my friends having the one time my friend had to go and turn off the TV when my dad was watching, and he was just staring at them like, what are you doing? My friends were never been more scared before. So just stuff like that, we would live in there, and those games are just memories we'll always share and laugh about. And, you know, whenever my friends, we were in the gym playing, he knew that, you know, something was going down, and someone was either going to have to go outside, jump in the snow, or go mess with him, something like that.
This one you've got tomorrow is a pretty big deal, taking on the Tar Heels, who are starting to feel a little bit better about life, getting some W's.
Yeah, definitely. They just came off a big win at Miami, and, you know, we know that it's going to be a tough game. We know that they're really probably the best rebounding team in the country. They got 3 6'11" guys that are all give us, you know, problems and fits on the boards. And, you know, having a guy like Marek inside, we all have to help out. 5 guys have to rebound. And, you know, we know if we just play similar to how we did in the ACC tournament against them, that, you know, we can come out with a win. We're going to have to make shots. But I think the biggest key for that game is rebounding and just, you know, limiting them on the offensive glass. I think that, you know, if we get stops and can score the ball, we'll be just fine. But it's going to be a battle.
You know, the last time you guys played them at the ACC tournament, there was all this chatter about how North Carolina was going to win 5 straight, win the tournament, and you guys only beat them by 100. I mean, that might be as good as I saw you guys play all of last year was the last time you played North Carolina.
Yeah, it was the best game, I think, for sure. Just a complete game from the start. You know, our defense was great. We were rebounding. Barama was great down low for us. Hopefully we can get him back soon to full health. And, you know, we're missing him right now. So it'll definitely be tougher without him. And, you know, that was just a complete game. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, you hate to end a game like that and then not be able to play the next game and see what we could have done in that tournament. But to end it on that, you know, your last game was your best game, I guess. So it showed we improved throughout the year.
Here's the thing that I came away with yesterday from. If you're friends with Buddy Boeheim and you go to his house and he's got this full court gym that's obviously great, right? You get caught up in some game, probably better be sure you're on a team that's going to win, or else you're going to have to go into the house and grab the remote from coach while he's watching a game and turn the TV off. And that would be awful, by the way, because you know Boeheim watches games all the time. That's what he does, right? He readily admits he watches a ton of ball, right? But then you're a friend of Buddy's and you're going over and playing pickup and you lose and you got to go in and turn the TV off. That'd be the worst. That'd be the worst.
I don't know. It depends what kind of snacks you got. Well, I'd look at it. What Mrs. B got? What's Mrs. B got going on over there?
Right? Jill, got any wings or?
I'm just saying.
Or chips or anything?
I gotta figure the Boeheims are living all right. Life's pretty good
come
up there
on,
in Syracuse.
Come on.
What kind of snacks you got?
Come on.
That'd be a
come
blast.
On. What kind
kidding
of
me?
Snacks?
That'd be awesome.
You got to go in and grab the remote and turn the game off.
Well, listen, if you're going to get yelled at, you might as well enjoy yourself getting yelled at. That's the way I'd look at it. Hey, listen, if I'm on the losing team and I can walk in there and turn the television off in front of coach, I'm at least going to get a handful of chocolate cake and something to drink while coach is kicking my rear end, kicking me out of the house. That's the way I'm going to look at it. Not just go sit there and just get abused. Great. Please.
How great is he, huh? How great is he? Yeah, excellent. Buddy, what fun.
Should be a good game tonight. Hope it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to it. Don't forget following Syracuse, Carolina tonight right here on ACC Network. We will discuss orange or apple juice. Well, we won't. Kelsey and EJ will. They'll recap the hottest topics around the ACC. And Matt James from The Bachelor, former Wake Forest wide receiver, makes his ACC Network debut with Kelsey and EJ and In Play tonight following Syracuse, Carolina, right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. We told you yesterday's a big day for the history of college football. The new College Football Hall of Fame class is named, and it features three players with ties to ACC institutions. We will come back, profile C.J. Spiller, Dan Morgan, and Harris Barton next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
It's a Tuesday. 844 say ACCN. More football, more hoops, more guests, all that good stuff. It's going to be good. All right. We briefly mentioned yesterday the National Football Foundation unveiled the class of 21 in terms of the College Football Hall of Fame. And a really distinguished group. This is when you know you're getting old.
Man.
When you see these names, you go, oh, man, I remember he's a great player. Then you dawns on you, they're going in the Hall of Fame? Yeah. But three ACC guys, if you will, are going to the Hall of Fame. And every one of them rightfully deserved, right? Because, I mean, these are three dudes. They were in their heyday at their respective institutions at North Carolina, Miami, and Clemson, respectively, man, these guys were must-watch players. And, you know, Harris Barton be the first guy we'll throw on you, Wes, because for folks that remembered ACC football in the 80s, we had a combination. And we talk about hoops all the time in the 80s, but football was a good time in the 80s too, because you had a combination of Clemson, Maryland, North Carolina in particular, that were beast. I mean, those three teams are always good. Tough, physical.
Is that holding? Is that holding?
Listen, the game Harris Barton played back in those days is probably not played today. But this guy right here would knock you into next week. He was a great pro, but man, he was really good at North Carolina.
Yeah, he was fantastic. He won three Super Bowls with the 49ers, All-America, academic All-America at North Carolina. Now is in private finance and out in the West Coast area. He is a guy who came out of Dunwoody, Georgia, a heralded offensive lineman who went to North Carolina and immediately got into business school. I think also somehow got his MBA at Chapel Hill too. And then, oh, by the way, was a high draft pick of the 49ers and won three Super Bowls. So easy choice, I think, for the College Football Hall of Fame voter on that one. The next one is a linebacker whose career at the college level ended up being the peak, because when he got to the NFL, he spent most of his NFL career, unfortunately, injured.
Hurt.
And that's Dan Morgan, who was a linebacker at Miami and a great player. And he and Nate Webster together were sensational for the Canes. But Dan Morgan was sensational. That 2000 Miami team was just lights out good, in part because of Dan Morgan and Nate Webster pack.
He was a beast. I'm telling you, man, this guy was just filthy good in college. And he spent a lot of time here in my backyard playing for the Panthers, but was always injured. I mean, we couldn't get a week into a season without Dan Morgan being nicked up in some shape or form. It's a shame, because what he proved to be from a collegiate standpoint, I mean, I'm telling you what, 44 was a bad dude. And he just never seemed to be able to stay healthy on Sundays. But, man, it didn't take away from what he accomplished down in Coral Gables. But really great football player. And during a great time for the Canes. I mean, they were that group now. That's when the people say, is the U back? Go look up that U and tell me when you're back. Because we may not see a run like that. I mean, I know Bama's going through it. Clemson's going through it. But those early Canes teams, in terms of this century, they were ridiculous. Talking about NFL guys really all over the place. Unbelievable.
Here's the other guy that we want to talk about in this century, okay? So since 2000, if I asked you to name the five most electric players of ACC football, he's on the list.
Yep.
I'm serious. If I said the last 20 years, give me the five most electric football players in the ACC, this guy's on the list.
Yeah, if you don't have C.J. Spiller in your top five, you're either an idiot or you haven't been watching. It's either A or B. But this 28 was 28 was gone. 28 ran like the wind. Look at him. Forget it.
I mean, seriously?
Who's going to catch that guy?
I mean, and when he touched it, the game was on. Look at a wheel route. Cooper Taylor, nice try.
And really, Wes, to be honest with you, 28 was the start, I thought, of the Dabo Swinney changing of the guard of Clemson's culture.
Right?
It was, hey, you got a big five-star recruit out of Florida, and that was really kind of the start of what was about ready to happen in Death Valley with Clemson football. And it started with C.J. Spiller. That recruitment, his development, and he was such a great player. I mean, just crazy good.
Here's the quote from Dabo yesterday. He was my first five-star, my first rounder, my first Pro Bowler, now my first College Football Hall of Famer. Hopefully there'll be some more to come down the years, but it's only fitting that CJ was the first. And that was from Dabo Swinney yesterday. And CJ Spiller will be with us at 9:30 this morning. And this is how you know how good he was. He was the MVP of the 2009 ACC Football Championship game. And the Tigers lost.
Right.
Yeah. And he had like 235 rushing yards and about 7,000 all-purpose yards that night. We should get Roddy Jones on here to talk about the time he tackled CJ on one of those kick returns in Tampa that night. I use the word tackle.
Yeah, attempted. You mean attempted tackle. Olay.
Come on, Roddy. I know you're watching. You got him. You got him. I know you did. So,
but,
there
you
go.
We talked a lot about Travis Etienne and the incredible career that we just watched him finish up.
Yeah.
To me, there's some parallels with the way they played, those two guys, right? They had the same kind of, hey, if you miss this tackle, he is gone. And they both had it. And whether it was a little toss in the backfield or a little handoff, whatever the case may be, the ball in his hand, if you didn't get him to the ground, you had a problem. You had a serious problem. But C.J. Spiller was, like you said, if you went top five most electric players that you've seen in the ACC this century, if he's not in your top five, I can't wait to see who the other five are, because that guy was unbelievable.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. So congratulations to those guys. Congratulations to Aaron Taylor, who played at Notre Dame as well on that list. And, you know, holy smokes. The College Football Hall of Fame honor. Now, understand, remember, Reese Davis was with us now, a couple of weeks ago, right, Pac? And said, you know, first team All-America is kind of the, you know, you got to make one of those teams. That's why we were talking about Trevor Lawrence making that first team, because that's not the line of demarcation, but it's pretty close, right? That, you know, your first team All-America by one of the major services, that's a big deal in ultimately being a College Football Hall of Famer. And you think about this run that in your eligibility's 10 years after the end of your college career, by the way. That's the other thing to remember. So Spiller went in on his second ballot. It's not an easy list to make. It is an incredibly distinguished honor. But the College Football Hall of Fame is littered with ACC guys every year, and this is a good group right here for sure.
Well, you look at some of the other names too. Tony Romo, Carson Palmer, David Fulcher. We'll throw that in there just because Brooks went to Arizona State. He'll love that. Kenneth Sims. I mean, all these guys. Darren Sproles was awesome at K-State, into the pros. Andre Tippett was a great player. Al Wilson. I mean, all these guys. I mean, you go through this whole list, you kind of wonder, you mean they're not in yet? I mean, it's that impressive. Bob Stoops gets in as a coach.
That's how hard it is.
From Oklahoma. It really is difficult to do. So, again, congratulations to all those gentlemen with ACC ties. Well, well deserved.
Well, and good of you to mention Kenneth Sims, since he was the number one pick of the Patriots out of Texas. I'm sure that's close and dear to Macri's heart, too. So, that's
there you
good.
Go. Get everybody
covered. That's what they got. They're hanging on to that right now. All right. Sit tight. When we come back, hour two, Leonard Hamilton comes by. Florida State's got a big ball game tomorrow night. Wolfpack in town. Brendan Marks as well from The Athletic. But games of the week coming up on Packer and Durham. We hit the headlines, including one Sunday in women's hoop. Might be the biggest of them all in the ACC this week. Back next.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast.